Chapter 14 Helping Behavior and Related Ideas. Helping behavior. Note the word help, helping, and helping behavior are used in a very general way in this text. These words relate to situations where one or more human beings provides assistance, goods or services for one or more individuals that need assistance. The term also applies to animals as well as human beings in some cases. This applies to situations where there is no apparent reward, as well as situations where there is an obvious reward, such as an exchange of money. The generalized concepts of helping used in this text also includes situations where an individual is ordered to help or where the assistance is part of one's job. However, I will deal with specific examples, as the text progresses, where helping behavior is of a specific type, such as altruistic. End of note. We live in a world where we cannot survive without the help of others. Perhaps more precisely, we cannot survive without the help of others because of our genetic limitations, such as lack of basic survival instincts. Unlike the more primitive animals, such as fish, amphibians and reptiles, we cannot obtain food at birth without assistance from others. We cannot even shelter ourselves from enemies or harsh weather conditions in the early years of life without help. We must receive help from other human beings to survive. The help we receive is essentially altruistic in nature in the early years of life. As we grow older, we still cannot survive without the help of others. In adult life, an individual is not skilled and knowledgeable enough to create all the necessities needed to maintain life. Usually, the individual becomes skilled in one or two areas and can produce goods or services related to the skill. For example, a farmer that is skilled in growing corn cannot survive on corn. Such a farmer cannot survive without shelter, medical care, and other types of food besides corn. In addition, the farmer would have great difficulty growing corn without machinery and fertilizer, which he or she must obtain from others who have specialized skills. Thus, the point is that human beings cannot survive without the help of others. In adult life, often help is exchanged with others by means of an economic system, which involves money. In childhood and in emergencies, the help we receive is often of an altruistic nature. But what is altruism? Is there such a thing as altruism in the real world? This is discussed in the following three paragraphs. The glossary of Taylor's Social Psychology defines the term altruism as follows. Altruism, an act performed voluntarily to help another person when there is no expectation of receiving a reward in any form. It is possible to argue that the concept of altruism as defined above does not exist. When people offer helping behavior, one can argue that there is always some expectation of a reward involved. The reward can be simply the satisfaction gained by helping another person. The reward can also include feeling good about yourself for helping another person. The individual that provides help can also receive rewards from others, such as compliments and favors provided in the future. An individual that helps others may also be liked by others, which can lead to new friendships. This is certainly a reward. In addition, perceiving an individual in an undesirable situation can cause discomfort for the perceiver. This can motivate the perceiver to help the individual that is in stress. There are, of course, many other examples, but the basic idea of the argument should be clear at this point. The above suggests the need for a slight modification in the definition of altruism. Thus, I will present a modified definition as follows. Altruism is helping behavior that is essentially motivated by a concern for the well-being of one or more individuals. This definition does not imply that there is no reward involved. The reward is directly connected with the well-being of another person. That is, helping a person can be rewarding. In addition, the word essentially is used in this definition to suggest that there might be other motivations and non-material rewards involved, such as feeling good about the self for helping, receiving compliments from others for helping, making friends because of helping, etc. However, the idea behind this definition of altruism is that the primary motivating force is the result of the concern for one or more individuals in an undesirable situation. And the primary reward is connected to successfully helping another person. such success can be quite rewarding. Thus, with the definition presented in the glossary of Taylor's Social Psychology, it is possible to argue that altruism in the absolute terms of the definition does not really exist. One can say that with this definition people may sometimes appear to be altruistic, but in reality they are not. With the definition I created, the concept of altruism is seen in the real world rather frequently. We often read stories in the newspaper about an individual that risked his or her life to save the life of a stranger. A very dramatic example of altruism is presented in Taylor's Social Psychology, where a truck driver stopped his vehicle to help a man stuck in a crashed delivery van, which was on fire. The truck driver risked his life in his effort to rescue the man from the burning vehicle, which exploded a few seconds after the rescue. The most extreme examples of altruism are often seen in war. There have been cases where a soldier placed his body over a grenade that was just about to explode, which was done to shield the other soldiers from the explosion. In this extreme example of altruism, the soldier is sacrificing his own life to save the lives of the people around him. Other extreme examples of altruism are seen in the family during emergencies. I know of a situation where a mother ran into a burning house to try to find and rescue her child. The woman's face was burned and severely scarred for life, but it turned out that her child was still in school, so the sacrifice was unnecessary. Less dramatic examples of altruism are seen all the time in our society, such as when people contribute money to charity and when an individual helps a stranger, such as when a person asks for direction. The most common example of altruism is seen when parents care for their children, which involves a great sacrifice in time, effort and money for at least 18 years. Thus, the general idea of altruism does exist in the real world and is rather common, if the definition is broadened slightly. An alternative to broadening the definition of altruism is to use a more general term instead. Pro-social behavior is such a term, and it is defined in the glossary of Taylor's Social Psychology as follows. Pro-social behavior: an act that helps or is intended to help others, regardless of the helper's motives. Pro-social behavior is a broader category than altruism. What term is most appropriate for scientific study, altruism or pro-social behavior? In Taylor's Social Psychology and the studies in the book, both terms are used. However, pro-social behavior is probably a better term, because it is more general, and it eliminates the question of motivation. I believe that both altruism and pro-social behavior are not the ideal terms for scientific study. Simpler and more descriptive terminology would be an improvement. The best terminology might simply be helping behavior, with three different categories, such as the following. Helping behavior that appears to be primarily motivated by a concern for the well-being of another individual. This fits the slightly generalized definition of altruism, which I defined above. The person may be also motivated by non-material gain, such as a reinforcement of a positive self-image, compliments from others, a positive feeling of successfully helping another person, etc. Helping behavior that appears to be primarily motivated by an exchange of money, goods or services. This is probably the most common type of helping. This type of helping most often involves an individual helping another for money. In general, this type of helping is part of our economic system, where people help others for money, and goods and services are exchanged for money. Helping behavior that appears to be motivated by both the concern for the well-being of another individual and for material gain. There are many services that sometimes, but certainly not always, come under this category. Often doctors and dentists provide services for some indigent patients for little economic reward. Thus, I will use the word helping and or helping behavior or some variation of these terms in the remainder of this text. Question: what steps are involved with helping behavior? Before an individual helps, he or she may go through the following five steps consciously and or unconsciously. 1. Perceiving a need. Before an individual provides help, a need for help must be perceived. In some cases, the perception of need is the result of a request for help. In other cases, such as in emergencies, it is visually apparent that a person needs help. 2. Decision-making in relation to providing help. The individual must make a decision whether or not to provide help. The individual must decide if he or she wants to take the responsibility for helping. The individual may feel it is his or her responsibility to help, if there is nobody else that can help. The decision to help or not to help is also determined by step 3, which follows. 3. Evaluating the costs and benefits of helping. The individual will generally make an evaluation of the costs and benefits of helping. The word costs is used in a very general way in this discussion and includes how much time, money, risk and effort will be required to help. In addition, the precise nature of the risk will usually be an important consideration. The benefits of helping include how much help can the individual provide. This is a very important consideration. That is, the individual must consider whether he or she is capable of providing help that will be beneficial for the person who needs assistance. This consideration is often based on relevant skills, resources and strengths of the individual. The individual also may consider the benefits he or she will personally gain from providing help. Benefits can include feeling good about the self, the satisfaction of successfully providing help, compliments from others, the chance to make a new friend, and in some cases money is an important consideration. Money is often a significant consideration to people that help others as a profession, such as lawyers, doctors and dentists. Another important motivation behind certain categories of helping can be found in relationships. Often if one partner provides help, it strengthens the relationship, which is an example of a benefit. If the partner does not provide assistance, the relationship may be weakened or destroyed. Thus, sometimes there is a great cost in not providing assistance. 4. Deciding how to help. The individual must decide how he or she is going to help. That is, the individual must decide precisely what actions to take to be helpful. Individuals that think in a sophisticated way will also exclude certain courses of action, because they are likely to be ineffective or risky. 5. Taking action to help. The last step involves taking the action needed to provide assistance. During this period of action, the helper may modify his or her actions in various ways as a result of feedback. The individual may even decide to stop helping for various reasons, such as more capable helpers appear to be available, the person in need of help refuses assistance, the task is more difficult or dangerous than the helper originally thought it was, etc. A 5-step list that is less detailed and more or less similar to the above is presented in Taylor's Social Psychology, and it is as follows. 1. Perceiving a need. Does someone need help? If the answer is no, the sequence ends. If the answer is yes, the person goes on to the next step on the list. 2. Taking personal responsibility. Am I responsible? If the decision is no, the sequence ends here. However, if the person decides to take responsibility, he or she will go on to step 3, which follows. 3. Weighing the costs and benefits. Is helping worthwhile? Obviously, if the answer is no, the sequence ends here, but if the answer is yes, the person goes on to step 4. 4. Deciding how to help. What should I do? If the person does not know what to do, the sequence ends here, but if the individual knows what to do, he or she goes on to the final step on the list. 5. Help is given. There are, of course, other factors involved in helping behavior besides the 5 steps listed on the 2 lists. In the following list, there are other ideas that relate to helping behavior in general. The socialization process in relation to providing helps. Most people learn from childhood that they are expected to be responsible to some degree for the well-being of the individuals around them. However, the extent that this idea is taught and learned by children varies greatly from one family to another. Some people are taught to be very sensitive and concerned for the needs of others. Some individuals learn to be concerned only about their own family. Other individuals learn to be concerned only about themselves. In addition, people learn when they should feel responsible for the well-being of a person in need of help. They also learn when not to feel responsible for a person who needs help. Social norms, values and beliefs in relation to providing help. This idea is closely related to the item discussed above. It is more or less the result of the average way people in our society have been socialized. Essentially, there are certain norms, values, and beliefs that our society in general has in relation to helping. Helping another person is usually considered an honorable act. However, in many cases there are no clearly defined norms that indicate when to help. In such cases, it is the individual's specific values and beliefs that determine whether he or she will provide assistance. The bystander effect: when there are many bystanders watching a person who needs help, the chances of help being provided may be reduced because of the bystander effect. This can be explained as follows. When there are many people that can provide help, and there is little or no communications between the people involved, everyone may assume that someone already provided help, such as calling the police in an emergency. In addition, if there are many people, such as a crowd, watching an individual who initially appears to need help, the conclusion after a short period of observation may be that the person in distress does not need help. This conclusion can be the result of the bystanders watching each other. That is, each person in the crowd may conclude that if nobody in the crowd is providing help, no assistance is needed. The individuals in the crowd may also feel that it is not their responsibility to provide help, because so many other people can provide the help. This is called diffusion of responsibility, which is the next item on this list. Diffusion of responsibility in relation to providing help: if there are many other individuals that can provide help, the chances of a specific individual, or even any individual, providing help may be reduced as a result of diffusion of responsibility. That is, if the individual believes others can help, he or she may think, why I should be the one to help. That is, the individual will not feel responsible in relation to providing help. The individual also may feel that some of the other individuals can provide better help than he or she can. Thus, the individual may not feel responsible or obligated to provide help. Helping behavior in animals. This might sound strange to some readers. Many people believe that animals act like animals and do not help each other. However, this is simply not true. There are many species of animals that help each other in some form or another. In Taylor's social psychology, there are a number of examples, such as the following. Termite soldiers defend the hive at the expense of their own lives. Certain species of baboons respond to threat in a unique fashion. The most dominant males take the most risky position in the pack when a threat is perceived. Dolphins will try to keep an unconscious dolphin afloat so he or she can breathe. They do this until the dolphin recovers and can obtain air from the surface of the water by himself or herself. In addition, most of us know from personal observation that animals will protect and take care of their young. Thus, even animals appear to be altruistic under some conditions.